Blog Talk Radio.
Do you understand what time it is now?
Crazy, mad, insane world.
Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down. Pass it on.
This space is for rent. How much are you willing to pay?
Cool it, Sir Oliver Goat Cheese.
Crazy, mad, insane world.
Easy to bitch, easy to whine, easy to moan, easy to cry, easy to feel like there ain't nothing in your life. Harder to work, harder to strive, harder to be glad to be alive. But it's really worth it if you give it a try.
Takes one to know one. Jack rules. Here is your host, Jack Hatfield.
Check in, they get a key, and then they unload their stuff. They're sitting in air conditioning and, you know, got a bed, TV, and a bunch of other things. And, you know, you just walk around, you go shopping, you go eating, you have nice dinners, la, la, la. That's a vacation. Sitting on an ocean, you know, sitting in a chalet in a hot tub. That's vacation. No, I'm just kidding. Mine was incredible. However, here's how it went. Drive there. Find the place. Tent must go up quickly. Threat of rain. Tent has to go up quickly. Everything has to be unpacked. Everybody has to be prepared. Threat of rain, big. Got it all out. Got it loaded. Got it. Got in it. Rain began.
Whew.
Now, because you took all day to get there, you got to find some food. So now let's go drive to the store, get some food. Now you got to cook it. Well, the rain ended enough to start a fire and cook food over an actual flame, over an actual campfire, which was incredible. Day two, rain went all night long. Day two, of course, you get up at the crack of sunlight with a tent because there's no blackout curtains on a tent. You know what I'm talking about. You know, we have blackout curtains all over the house, but blackout curtains on the tent, no sun. Blamming in. And just amazing that you're forced to wake up and do whatever because the birds are chirping. Life all around you has begun. Cars are running. So you get up, and the first day is going to look at waterfalls up there in the mountains. And we looked at waterfalls and realized that there's some potential for hiking. But we knew the next day was climbing a mountain, so we waited. But we planned on going fishing when we were looking at these waterfalls. We never got around to it. And, in fact, it rained in the middle of the day, which prevented the trout from biting. So we had to go to a trout farm. Barely got there. He was leaving. He was leaving his trout farm. And I went, can we fish in your trout farm? I mean, there's a lot more odds of being able to catch fish in the stocked pond they have there. He said, well, and he took me over to it, and he said, well, look here, they're not going to bite. And I was like, they're not biting the river either. Everybody just told me. He said, yeah, but they can't see the food. This guy gets his water from a stream up the mountain. And apparently there's some construction going on, and every time it rains, a bunch of mud enters his stream, and boy, the water was like coffee. It was like coffee with milk, seriously. And he said, it'll be clear tomorrow. It's just right now, there's nothing you can do. He said, now you can net them. I can hook some back over here on the side over here, and you can net them. So I went and asked my daughter, I said, sweetheart, you're the one, we wanted you to catch the fish. So that we could clean it, kill it, clean it, and eat it. I mean, that's one of the big things we were gonna do. Oh my goodness, can you believe he just said that on the air? He's gonna get his daughter to catch a fish so he can kill it, clean it, and eat it. Over a campfire in the woods. Weird. We have weird rituals, I know. It's very strange. I know this is going to freak some new listeners right now. Just went, some of them, not my regular ones, you guys. You guys are awesome. By the way, I'm going to bring this up right now. I got to say something. You guys are doing your homework. Your homework is to go tell everybody you meet, whether you know them or not, to listen to the show. And wow, let me say, you're doing that. The reason I know is because for 2 weeks since I was gone, I guess y'all just didn't, y'all wanted to hear me not in the mountains. I mean, hear me when I'm in the mountains. But wow, another growth spurt like you would not believe. And I have to thank each and every one of you. I'm not kidding. We have grown more in the last 2 weeks than we did in the previous six. And then we had, of course, those missed periods in the first of the year, and I apologize for that. But we're back, and then we come back. Don't call it a comeback. We did that show, and then we missed a week. I had to go. I'm sorry. I had to go. It was in the mountains. Anyway, back. And I'm just going to thank each and every one of you. I'm just ecstatic that you guys are doing your homework and you are telling everybody to listen to the show. And wow. And now the feedback, remember, email me anytime. Find me on Facebook at facebook.com/emergetriumphant. Cause that's where we're going to talk about some really cool stuff today. I've got a two people that I don't like right now. Well, three people. And then I'm going to talk about the threat freedom. Then I'm going to talk about the whitewashing of slowly killing you. And then I'm going to talk about how people circumvent the facts and the way things are. But let me finish first in the mountains. So I go to my daughter and I go, so Jonna, you want to catch a fish in a net? You know, you got to put a positive spin on it. Would you like to cheat real quick? Because we ran out of options. So I said, you want to catch fish in a net? It'd be real cool. I mean, we're going to let you do it all by yourself. And she, yeah, absolutely. So that worked out great. She went over there. Now, the guy who does the netting said, you know, you just stick the net in, put it under a fish, and, you know, pull up the fish. And I said, just do what he said. And she goes and just simply puts the net right in, and the guy, she pulls a fish straight out of the water. I mean, straight, just put it in, grab the fish, straight out of the water, fish is amazing. Absolutely amazing. The guy looks at us and puts in probably a good 3-pound trout she got. Good 3-pound rainbow trout. Gorgeous. So good 3-pound trout. Guy looks at us because that was amazing, because normally when the fish see a net, they run. These fish were almost like jumping in her net. It was very odd. Well, the second time she puts the net in, it's a little more difficult, and she didn't get one jump in her net. But the very first time, that fish was ready. That fish wanted to be a part of the kill, clean, and eat. So I was real proud of that fish, and he was the biggest fish she caught. So he said, after a few more minutes of trying, he said, let's try something different. So he shows her how to turn the net over and plunge it into the water, pull it down against the ground, and then pull it up the edge. And once she does that, she catches four big trout. And I said, well, I don't know how many we need. She's got four in the net. How much will that first fish feed? He goes, that'll feed two people, a good portion. I said, well, okay, that's mine. And so I think if we got two more, we'd be fine. And he goes, okay. He said, how many people are eating us? These three? What are you talking about? I'm going to eat two pieces. I'm going to eat a trout. I know for a fact I'm going to eat an entire fish. So we got to get ready for that. And we took the dog, one of our dogs, the crazy one, the new one. You guys know what I'm talking about. We took him, and he was going to have some trout, too. We weren't going to play around and not let him try some of the same mountain food we were trying. So I tried to put two of them back. I grabbed the net, and I turned it over, and I tried to, you know, let them swim out. Well, none of them want to swim out now that they've gotten in the net. No, even when you put the edge of the net right in the water so they can swim over it, they don't. I have to physically go in and grab two of them and throw them out the net. So now we got three fish. Now here's the cool part. We go and he takes them back and he weighs them and you pay X per pound. Ungodly inexpensive amount of money. I think we ended up with 7 pounds of fish. Seven pounds, I think. It was $18. 7 pounds of clean, fresh rainbow trout. So stunning. So he cleans them. He's about to clean them, and I look at her, and I go, you know, we were going to do this, and I, of course, was going to hide some of the facts about it away from her. And so I asked her, you know, would you like to go outside? Let's go look at the water again. She said, no, I want to see the fish get, you said, cleaned. So I picked her up, put her in my arms just in case, you know, you had to do the quick over the eye or hug or whatever. And she watched him pop the air bladder, stop the fish from moving. Then she watched him take the meat right off the bone and fillet it and then clean the fillet. And the just, she, every time she was amazed. She was like, that's what we're eating. The part he cut off. And then so I said, well, will they be boneless? And he said, they get about 95% boneless this way. You get a few in the meaty portion at the top, but you want that meat. I mean, that's just, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 bones. I think it was a total of 14 bones that we got out of all the fish. So he was right. So we took it. He puts it in a bag with ice. Take it. And now you, I went to the store and I got portobello mushrooms to grill with it. So it was fish and mushrooms. And I got romaine leaves that I made a non-fork needing salad. So we had this big gourmet mountain meal cooked in a cast iron skillet over an open flame. Jonna loved every bit of it. It was stunning. I mean, stunningly fun. And she had that mountain trail. Well, the next day was go up the mountain, so we left early and hit the mountain trail and was on that mountain for 3 hours, but we climbed to 4,930 feet. 4,930 feet. It was amazing. Dog went the way. There's actually a little section of the path, which is now my screensaver on my phone, screensaver on all my computers, everything. I showed people this picture. There was a little portion of the path that you saw a little, you know, you saw people going off to the side. Well, you didn't see people. You just saw where they could potentially go offside. But then you also saw that if they did so and they walked a little more than 20 feet instead of 18, then they were no longer on the mountain. They were off the side of the mountain. So I had to go out there, of course, and I walked the 18 feet, maybe 19, and took some stunning photos because you were seriously standing on the edge of the mountain. Nothing below you. Nothing in front of you but air and a peregrine falcon. You know, when you can look down at a peregrine falcon flying and then other mountains around you and you look down at your foot and you are, you know, 6 inches away from the edge. I mean, from it, from nothing, from 3,000 feet of nothing. And I look back. I actually made this comment on the mountain. I said, this is a moment where everybody needs to come stand. I said, because it is at this moment where you can say, you know what? I'm done. I don't want to mess with it anymore. I don't want to settle. I don't want to mess with it. I don't want to emerge triumphant. I'm ready to quit the fight. And it right there, you can. You could have said, it's over and gone. I mean, amazing. Amazing. And what I see is not a lot of people jump off this mountain, which makes me feel good about the human spirit, which is why we're here to emerge triumphant, right? Yes. So we finished. That was only off to a side. It was about 3,000 feet, so I had 2,000 more to go. Get on top of the rock, of course, take pictures, go all the way down. I got the dog on about 3 foot of a 6 foot leash so that he stays right next to me. Can you imagine? Dog has no idea. Wet rock. I told him he was wearing a harness and a leash, and the leash was hooked to his chest harness. And I said, well, if you fall, you're going to be the best spokesperson for this chest harness leash combo than there ever was. But he didn't even come close. He was awesome. Now, what he did do, this is amazing. Now, the dog was acting a little crazy. He was out of his element. I mean, every person that would come around a bush, he would growl, and he's not that type of dog. Well, we come to find out that on that mountain, dog out of their element. I have no libation. I've got to work on that here after the music break. But a dog out of their element, smelling all of the stuff, the bears, the urine from all the animals, you know, you had some skunk smells, some rotten smells, a lot of, you know, this is a self-contained ecosystem, and he is in this world where you're going down these paths where you can't go left or right. There's trees, and the path is only as wide as you, and he is vastly out of his element. And then, you know, he's on a leash, and he's told, you hit a rock, you know, he can look out, and he can see that there's nothing there. And he was completely out of his element. But when he got to the top, he calmed down for a little bit. He actually sat down on the top of the rock and hung out. But then the going down, the going up, those were two tough periods because he couldn't, you know, he smelled all these smells, but he couldn't go into the woods that much. And it was just drove him crazy. But it was neat learning that's why. Out of his element and learning all that stuff was... it was real amazing for him. So that was the whole day, and that was a lot. And there was a gourmet shop on the way back where I got some tremendous fillets, local fillets, and local sauce for some pasta, and made an incredible fillet pasta meal in the rain. Because guess what happened? At about 200 feet from the bottom of this mountain, you're going down the way down, the slope trail is just, it's long and very little slope, so it's just long. It's three times longer down the slope trail to come down than it is to go up, because they slope it so gently. Some people have to go up that because they can't handle the extreme up of the ups part. A lot of people are coming down the extreme up part because they took the easy slope part up. And they said, you know, it's easier going down this part than up. And I sorely disagree, because there were some parts where, you know, I had to let my daughter go up and tell her to stop at this one spot. And then the dog, he only knows one way to get up a steep portion, and that's to, you know, start running. So when I told him to start, I'm with him, and I have to go with him. So boom, 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 up that we had to roll. So anyway, the rain, 200 feet, stood and never, ever, ever stopped till tomorrow. And no, wait. Let me tell you this real quick. I know I'm boring most of the people. Hey, I'll get to the issues. A lot of people want to know what I did. No. Yes. Yes, they do. Some people. All right, two people. Okay, nobody. Well, I got it anyway. Funny story. Had a little break in the rain. Couldn't start a fire. Had a propane grill, so we're perfectly okay. We, you know, you have to make ready for these things. Put the propane bill underneath the food tent, which we have, which is a screened-in like canopy. And put it in there because it's not going to create enough heat to burn it down. get all that ready, and the bottom drops out again. So instead of making everybody go, I said, let's just wait it out, see if it relaxes a little. We might eat a little late. Everything's already ready. I've already got the steak seasoned, mushrooms marinating, bacon ready, pasta bowl on top of the Bunsen burner on top of the propane. Everything's ready. So we're going to sit in the tent, have a mountain libation. Yes. Have a mountain libation, and suddenly Dollar gets off the bed. We were playing a game and says, wow. Why are you saying wow? Why are you saying wow? Well, look down, and she's walking on a waterbed. Yes, the tent floor has become just like a waterbed. I don't know if there's not a lot of people that know what a waterbed is anymore. Is there any waterbed still? Do people still buy these things? I'm talking about not waveless. I'm talking about a waterbed, which was just basically a big old balloon sitting in a wooden crate. That's all mine was. And I had to put these cushion things on the side. When you got off, you hurt your bahunka. So anyway, the bottom of the tent is now this waterbed. Now, tents are waterproof on the bottom for as long as they can be. Now, to get to the bottom of the tent, it had to get through tarp A because there's a ground tarp down. So the water's already seeped through tarp A. Now it's working on bottom of tent. Yeah, oh my. My, oh my, oh my. I've got some spray waterproofing that I sprayed the sides of the tent with, but we're going to have to roll it out, turn it over, and spray the bottom with multiple cans and replenish it, because once it gets saturated like that, it's not ever going to be as good as it was. So anyway, guess what has to happen? You have to move the tent. The water's not moving. I go outside, I'm in the rain, I've got my axe, and I try to dig a tunnel so that the water would leave. Well, the problem is we were actually in a bowl. We're under this tree in this little bowl, and for me to dig, it would have taken about a foot and a half of digging, and I had no shovel. Yeah, foot and a half of digging to break that water out of there, and it would have left a little, it would have had to go about 2 feet into the tent, too, because the bowl, actually, the tent is so big, the bowl was only really in the 8 foot around center in the middle, and the tent's 16 feet long, so you had 4 feet before you could get to the water that was disrupting in this little bowl. So, tent had to move. Well, guess what? There's now water in the porch, too. The tent has a little screen in front porch. No bottom. But it soaks. If you move it to there, you can't just move it 4 feet. It's now got to be moved 20 feet towards the pond in the middle of the rain. So, the rain lets up enough. I tell everybody, go get in the food tent. We got to take the heavy stuff out. The beds are still in there. Drag the tent the 20 feet. Got to reset it back up. Got to re-tighten it, re-roll it, re-get it, get back in, dry as a bone, put all the stuff back in, and then go cook and eat. That was how the last day went. She never got to catch a trout, but she did sit there with a brim buster in the pond. Now, me and the wife fish that pond every night, and I only got one bite. I got a ton of nibbles. They never took it, though, but I only got one bite where I snatched back on the rod. Fish didn't move. Fish didn't move. Fish said, you know what? I'm tired of this. Snap. So it was a mucho large fish. That was the only true bite I got. But Jonna sits there with a brim buster for 2 hours while I was doing something. This is day two. Really not paying any attention because she's just sitting there with the brim buster. I don't think she's going to catch fish. No, we haven't had nothing but nibbles. suddenly you hear, I've got a fish. Just as quiet as I can. I got a fish. I got a fish. She had to start screaming at the top of her lungs. Go over there. She catches about a 5.5-6 pound carp on her brim buster. Amazing. On a, I don't know if you people know what a brim buster is. What is he talking about? What's a brim? Is this a gun? Actually, I got to change the accent on that. I'm backwards. please tell me what this brim buster is. Because anyone that talks like a brim buster knows what it is. Anyway, it's fiberglass cane pole, like the old bamboo poles, with just a string tie on the end. And she caught that 5 pound carp with that thing. It was amazing. All right, I know. Let's get to the issues. I'm very well aware of it. All right, take a small break. We'll be right back with probably the beginning of the show. What do you think? People don't like, because I'm not going to finish with it, that's for sure. I don't know if you heard about it. Pretty bad. Remember, this show used to be called Fixed Family, and it was a whole bunch of this, but this is particularly brutal. 18-year-old teenage uncle, right? Teenage uncle. Killed his 5-year-old niece to death with a sickle. Do you guys, here know what a sickle is? You do? It's kind of what the dead man carries. Kinda. There's two types. That's a sieve. Or scythe, depending on who you talk to. And then a sickle is a little more rounded and held in the hand. Yeah, without the long pole. Right. Anyway. He beat her. To death with a sickle. And stuffed her body in a plastic container in the family garage.
They don't know why he did it. He told them that he did it.
He told them where he put the body. He told them what he killed him with.
Told them everything. People. 18-year-old knuckle. Knuckle-headed uncle. What are you doing? What are you doing? The grandmother found the body. That's right. The 18-year-old lived with grandmom. And it was his niece. That is particularly disturbing, but almost not as disturbing as this. Mother, 29, and her boyfriend repeatedly raped her baby from birth until she was 18 months old. Both of them. This is not just mom that made a stupid decision with a man, 29 or 62. I mean, hello. If you could see the pictures of these people, it's Pinellas County. Pinellas County in Florida. The mother actually assaulted her baby daughter from birth until she was 18 months and allowed her 62-year-old boyfriend to join the assaults. Now, the guy in an interview said that they both fantasized and talked about having sex with the baby but denied harming the child. But again, 29-year-old mother. They found computer files of them discussing rapes of her with her boyfriend. The doctors are saying they've been having sex with the baby since the child was born. They discussed doing it over webcams. People, what? What's going on? What is happening to the country? Now you see how easy it is and absolutely important that I absolutely could not continue Fix the Family because we're not there yet. It's not a family. We didn't know if he was the dad. You know that? Twenty-nine, very pretty. 62, ugly as sin. He is ugly as sin. He's just disgusting. What does that mean to you when you hear this? What does it mean to you when you hear this? Because to me, it just speaks of tragic lives wasted, and other lives, innocent lives, hurt. glad they got the baby out when they could. Wish they could have done it sooner. But there's something wrong with people today. I revitalize people's spirits all the time, all day long. Spoken to several people today, and some are a little downtrodden, and got them back up. I can't. There's nothing to speak about here. There's no spirit to. There's. I don't know what to do. See this part. This part drives me nuts. This part drives me insane. However, I have to continue the mantra that I always do, no matter who, where I speak. Some of those people leave the stadium going, oh, he's just another schmuck. And some of the people come up and go, I've never felt better or more alive. You are amazing. And if at least one of those happened in a stadium of 10,000, then I did my job. And if ever my talkings could ever prevent some nut freak, stupid, there are things that I'm trying hard not to say. I am trying to real hard. Not to say. You know what I need? Just for a second. Before I get into the other stuff. A little slow piano. That's all. All right, we're going to make some, our next show, we're going to make a lot of announcements because we are getting involved with a very large network where we're going to become a parenting and technological expert, where we're going to write and blog to reach up to 3 million women. So it is mostly at a female site. They're trying to actually turn it into, also into a full service site where it's not just about relationships and sex and women's issues. We go into parenting and men's issues. So we're going to get into fathering a lot, and hopefully going to be announcing that next week. So it'll be great. Got another thing that we're dealing with a group of people. We're trying to help them emerge triumphant. We're going to be announcing that real soon. And then we're going to launch something. You might get a feel for it today. We're going to launch something by September. And it's going to be real cool. Real cool. All right, so. We've had many discussions on Google, Facebook, watching you. Yes. Now, another company has come up that uses their technology. Okay. Uses their technology to give you a deal. But it uses your information that you readily put out there to the world. It's called Face Deal. You walk in a bar, you see a blue camera, you go up to it, it gets your face. You have to say yes to the app on your phone, and it'll send you deals, like a free drink or a discounted drink if you walk in a bar and accept the app. And it recognizes your face because of you being tagged in photos on your Facebook profile or your friends. Yeah, I just said that. Let me throw that out there for you one more time. Your face can be tagged and recognized by the stuff you have placed in the public on Facebook. Now, if the government did this, everyone would go, what the? No way. But because it's a private enterprise giving you a free deal because you opted in, no problem. I'll take my 10% off my next martini to join in and give you more information about where I go and what I drink. Do you not see this, everyone? I'm not saying it's weird, but isn't it weird that they want every single person to have a phone? They'll even give you one. The government will give you a phone, a cell phone. You can't afford one, the government will appoint a phone for you. Excuse me, Thursday. Man, are you kidding me? Yeah, I'm not. I know. Yes. The government could utilize the same technology to grab your photo from your car, know where you drive, know what shops you enter, know your exact routine of what you do all the time. And then grab the technology of figuring out where your face was when you took that photo. And if it was in a local spot, it could say, hey, you want to go back to McGillicuddy's? Right now it's all used for advertising, of course. That's all it's ever going to be used for, right? There's no way all that information is going to be getting the wrong hands, right? No way. There's no. No. My face? I have no idea if I'm tagged in any photos, but I know for a fact I haven't tagged me in any photos. There are 300 million people on Facebook. You cannot ignore the fact that it's massive. But I have started a little system where we're actually creating many, many Facebooks. So we're going to break out certain groups into these sections. And I'm going to promise that these sections will constantly never, ever be spied upon. But that is something I'm working on. And if you are interested in that, please make sure you follow me on Emerge Triumphant, Facebook.com, Emerge Triumphant, or Twitter/Jack Hatfield. Very, very important. When we launch these things, I really would like you to be involved. And you can see and go on there, and we promise not to do the things Facebook has done. Very annoying. Companies, when they get all this information, certain people come up to them and go, you know, that information is very valuable. I think I'd like to buy it. And if I don't get to buy it, I'll make it so difficult that you won't understand what your name is. This reminds me of Boris and Natasha, Bullwinkle, the spies. That's who I think is behind all this. I'm serious. Boris, they were never killed. Nope. Nope. They were hurt. But Bullwinkle and Squirrel never used a pistol. Bullwinkle got his awesome antlers. Kills lots of things as a moose, but no, he never used it. I think Rocky would have done it if he had a pistol. I think he could have done it. You never know. He had that, you know, it was a flying squirrel. He could have definitely dropped, you know, napalm or something while he was flying over. Took out Boris. You know, Boris and Natasha are very much Adams family-ish in their appearance, even down to the shortness of the male and the, you know, hotness of the female. And the Adams family's altogether kooky and spooky. I mean, we all know that. So, I just put it all together. The people behind the Facebook and the spying and the Google spying, Boris and Natasha, which look like the Addams Family, they're all together kooky and spooky, and so is all this. So is all this. That's it. We put it, ladies and gentlemen, breaking news. We have just discovered that all of the spying going on in Google and Facebook is not the work of your nefarious government. It is the work of Boris and Natasha. I do not know if they have a last name. Do they? They did have a last name, didn't they? Boris and Natasha. Let's look that up. Hang on real quick, people. We got to look that up. If they've got a last name, that's going to be hilarious. Boris. See, what's funny is... that's the fifth thing people look for. Last name. Natasha Fatale and Boris Badenov. Yes. Yes. Fatale. She was not married to Boris, so she was single. Interesting. I didn't even get into this Facebook thing. They have an algorithm that finds your face, and it tells you that that's a 98% or 95% confidence that it's your face. And then you get this like a instant message or whatever on your phone, and you got to show it to the bartender or the whatever, and you get a free whatever it says on your phone. How cool is that? Yeah, totally cool. So anyway, back to the breaking news. The spying is Boris Badenov and Natasha Fatale. Because they look like the Addams Family, and they're kooky, and they're somewhat spooky. Spooky. For next week, we're going to have the Addams Family motto. The one sitcom thing I play on the air all the time is One Day at a Time. You know the song. You don't remember the, oh man, come on. Three chicks, mom, single mom and two daughters. Valerie Bertinelli was in that thing. Valerie, she's still beautiful. You know, there's young people listening to the show right now going, I have no idea what he's talking about. Go look it up, people, One Day at a Time. The song was called This Is It. This is it. This is life. The one you get. Go and have a ball. Listen closely. Somewhere that's new, baby. Don't you worry. good stuff right there. That's good stuff. Y'all got to look that up. See if there's classic shows of that somewhere on the web that you watch. That was a fun show. I don't know if I watched it for the beauty or I liked that song. But that song's awesome. I mean, it goes with our opener, Frank, you know, that's life. Sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down. You just want to be up more than you're down, right? You want to emerge triumphant. And then that song, of course, take it one day at a time and take it as it comes and deal with it. Just like the camping trip. I mean, it wasn't 100% perfect. Go there, put up a tent, cook, go to bed, get up real fast, go sightseeing, cook, go to bed, get up real fast, walk, cook, rain, move tent, wake up, put up tent, wet, and then go look at more waterfalls before you have to get out of there. But that's how it went. It was very, lots of go for 4 days. Saw some beautiful stuff, though. All right, so we have a lot of announcements next show. We have a lot of things coming up. I'm tired of saying that it's coming up because I'm really ready for it to just happen. But for some reason, our timetables keep moving back and back and back, and it's not our fault, but it's just we take it one day at a time here at Emerge Triumphant Industries and Ultimate Human. Areas. Before I get into this one, I don't want to talk about this one then because Adele's up. Yes, 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 yes. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful Adele. Go to Adele Amani, Path of the Peaceful Warrior, ladies and gentlemen. She is the UK's leading expert in energetic communications, Adele Amani. If you guys haven't heard her, you haven't looked her up. I do her transformational meditation often, and you should do it too. You can listen to her soothing voice. You can hear it here, but it's not as good because my voice is all around it. But when you get her meditation series, it's just absolutely, absolutely stunning. You should try it. Okay, so take a break from me. Listen to the beauty that is Adele and go check her out, all right?
My name is Adele Omani, and I would like to welcome you to Adele's Magic Minutes. On this part of the show, I would like to be able to bring you answers to questions that are being answered about attracting love, wealth, happiness, success into your life. When you allow yourself to flow with the universe, the energy being you are, petty differences, stressful confrontations will never happen again. Understand it's your decision who you desire around you and their values. Those not of your values, when given no more thought, will drift from your experience. You attract to you what you think on, give your attention to, and focus upon. And you realize this, you will be able to see this from your emotions. Because it's your emotions that are your indicator to where you are and where you want to be. If you're in a situation or you have a confrontation with somebody and this doesn't feel good, this makes you feel bad, then this is telling you that you are moving yourself into a lower vibration. You are disconnecting yourself from your high energy where you need to be. So these situations where you feel bad are ones that you want to move away from. And it's the same with when you want to attract into your life. You want to attract things, situations, experiences, and people that make you feel good. You have to do this by actually resonating out the same vibration. So therefore, you have to be in that emotional state first and foremost to attract back. Now, I call this your emotional guidance system because it's very, very powerful. And when you start to understand your feelings, you will know when any situation, any experience, any communication with another person is right for you, because it will feel right or it will feel wrong. And you must realize that this isn't just feelings, you know, just something going on in your stomach. This is your energy talking to you. This is your energy communicating energetically with you, because you are picking up on the energy of the situation, the person, the experience. And if that energy is on a lower vibration to you, then it will not match where you should be, and it will make you feel bad. So once you get to know how to read your emotions, you will be in a much, much better place to be able to know which situations are right for you. And it is also down to, once you find your situations and the ones that don't feel good to you, is taking your focus off these. Whether it be something that a person is saying, whether it be a certain experience, whether it be that you've been asked to go and do something and it doesn't feel right to you, all you have to do is to take your focus away from these energies. Take your focus off the person, take your focus off the experience. And what happens is, because they're on a lower vibration to you, the universe will not attract them into your experience. It will only attract where you are resonating from. So if people are around you and they're on a low vibration, when you take your attention off them, the universe will move them out of your experience. And I can say this with absolute facts, because I've worked with so many clients who have needed to move themselves away from others, and every single time it happens. So there need never, ever be conflict in your life again. When you learn to live from your emotions, you learn to energetically communicate.
Sorry. Sorry. Adele Imani, ladies and gentlemen. Just go to adeleimani.com. That's EdeleImany.com. The UK's leading expert on energetic communication. Doesn't that just make you... You learn so much in her magic minutes. Just a lot. Let's get to the second half, Shelley, where I get really pissed off.
Crazy, mad, insane world.
Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down. Pass it on.
This space is for rent. How much are you willing to pay?
Cool, Mr. Oliver Goat Cheese.
Everybody thinks. give a damn what anybody thinks of what I've done. That's life. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out, and I know one thing. Each time I find myself flat on my face, I pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life.
It's a crazy, mad, insane world.
Easy to bitch, easy to whine, easy to moan, easy to cry, easy to feel like there ain't nothing in your life. Harder to work, harder to strive, harder to be glad to be alive. But it's really worth it if you give it a try. Easy to bitch, easy to whine, easy to moan, easy to cry, harder to work, harder to strive, harder to be glad to be alive.
It takes one to know one.
Jack rules.
Here is your host, Jack Hatfield.
How y'all doing? Second hour coming up right here. Let's start off with something really irritating to hear. Okay? Bribery. It's all good, right? Bribery? Nothing to it. No big deal. Well, Detroit. That's right, Detroit. The great, growing, shining city, Detroit. Man, it used to be awesome. BCK Shoes is offering every student a pair of shoes for showing up to school. Doesn't that sound great? I mean, just on the cusp of that, that man's just saying, you know, show up in school. We'll give you some shoes. We just want you to get an education. It's all about getting an education, right? Isn't it great when you hear someone doing something like this about helping kids get an education? I mean, kind of a little bit of bribery, yes, but it's a gift to say, I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you for taking the initiative and coming to school. I'm proud of you. I think it's great. I mean, when you hear something like that on face value, it is fantastic. But alas, let's go into the facts. Are you ready for this? Manager at BCK says, well, they're in the community, so they want to get back to the community, so why not do what we do best, which is shoes? What he says is that he would give away a free pair of black leather Nikes to every student who comes to class on October 3rd. Not every student that comes to class and stays in class. Not every student that comes to class and does well. Not every student that comes to class and stays the whole year. Not every student that has perfect attendance. No, he's coming to and give a Nike to every student that comes to class on October 3rd. October 3rd, ladies and gentlemen. Just that one day. Now, why that one day, do you think? Why? Why simply one little day? Remember, he was doing it for the children's education. It's for the betterment of the children, right? No. Let's find out what that day is, shall we? Let's look it up. Let me pretend to be rummaging through papers. I need a bigger piece of paper. Something makes more noise. There we go. Let me look. Let me look through the calendar. I mean, not pretend. Yes, I know. Let's really look through the calendar. It's hard to do special effects when you're sitting there saying, you know this is radio. They cannot see me. We don't have the webcam installed yet for a reason. Yes, because you're ugly. Well, so what is October 3rd? Well, it happens to be the day students are counted at school. No, I didn't say roll. I didn't say they just called the roll. No, I didn't say that. I said they were counted, and their number is used, the number that day is used as the basis for per pupil funding from the state and the federal government. Jack, are you saying this man's bribing kids to show up on this one day just so they can get counted? Yes. That's right. Bob's Classic Kicks in Midtown Detroit is giving away a free pair of black leather Nikes to every student who comes to class on the day that students get counted. So the funding for the school goes up or at least stays the same. The more bodies in class, the more money schools have all year. Is this incentive to the children? Anyone? Manager Dorsey says, you're not worried about cost, Suze, because it's about educating our kids. No, you're lying. You're lying because you said you wanted them to show up on day it's counted so that even if they didn't show up the next day, they got a free pair of Nikes, but the teachers lived the life that they were living. The teachers, y'all are already underpaid. I know this. Don't get me started on that. I am a teacher. I've been a teacher in adult ed. I've worked where you've worked. Don't know. None of you, not a single one of you can tell me that I don't know the worth of a teacher. But I also want to say that if you have 17,000 children show up for a free pair of shoes and the next day you have 2,000 people because the rest of them left, got their free shoes and went on about their business, they're not staying because you're a good teacher. They're not staying because you're making a difference. They're not staying because their parents are helping them. They're not staying for a lot of reasons. Maybe because Detroit schools are sucking right now. They're plagued with failing test scores. Right? Crime? But this one person wants to have them counted so that they keep the money? How is that helping kids? You know how to help the kids? Get to their parents, get to their homes, and make a difference. Plummeting student population going on in Detroit. Now, 14, I don't know about you, but 14 to 17,000 shoes. A manager of a shoe store is suddenly just going to accept that loss. What do you think about that? What do you think? That's a lot of shoes, man. Where's that money coming from? Where's he getting it from? Is Nike helping?
I got a better idea. Why don't you say, I'll give away your shoes if you stay the beginning of the school year and you maintain an A average, or at least a B, or at least a C. Let's shoot for the middle. Why don't you do that? All right, so I'm going to bust in some health. Ready to bust in some health? Anyone? I thought so. Hell. Shocking reports on the FDA. Terrifying of being outed for its questionable practices, has spied on its own employees in hopes of rooting them out. I have a, excuse me. It's milk. A little bit of milk. All right, back to where I was. Spying on its own employees in hopes of rooting out any whistleblower because of their questionable practices inside. The intensive spy operation of the FDA on its own scientists has emerged last month because the use of sophisticated spy software. The agency tracked and logged every move that targeted individuals. They even intercepted personal emails and copied documents on their personal thumb drives. That's right. Now, the targeted scientists had expressed concern over the agency's approval of dangerous medical imaging devices for mammograms and colonoscopies, which they believed exposed patients to dangerous levels of radiation. Now, another whistleblower has stepped forward, and what he has to say about the agency's drug safety reviews is shocking even to all of you out there that say, the FDA is my friend. It means friend, drugs, always. Right? No. No. So, what he spoke out about was the systemic suppression of safety. This guy was a drug reviewer for the FDA in the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research. Excuse me, you don't have a cough button. Drug Evaluation and Research from 1998 to 2008. In the interview, he said FDA's to all of my listeners, FDA's. Don't look behind the curtain. Pay no attention to me. Pay no attention to the anal seepage or sudden heart attacks because you're taking a diabetes drug. Pay no attention to that. No. We've said they're all good. He said the FDA bypassed or ignored safety issues on major drugs approved during his employment from 1998 to 2008. He said, in the Center for Drugs, as in the Center for Devices, the honest employee fears the dishonest employee. There's irrefutable evidence that managers of CDR have placed the nation at risk by corrupting the evaluation of drugs and by interfering with our ability to ensure the safety and efficacy of drugs. While he was at the FDA, drug reviewers were clearly told not to question drug companies and that our job was to approve drugs. We were prevented, except in rare instances, from presenting findings at advisory committees. In 2007, formal policies were instituted so that speaking in any way that could reflect poorly on the agency could result in termination. If we asked questions that could delay or prevent a drug's approval, which of course was our job as drug reviewers,
Management would reprimand us, reassign us, hold secret meetings about us, and worse. Obviously, in such an environment, people self-censor. According to him, people will be shocked just how malleable safety data is. As examples, he points out human studies are typically too short and contain too few subjects to get a clear picture of potential risk. I'm getting pissed off while I read it. Well, I tell you this, in such a scenario, even a single case of serious adverse event must be taken very seriously, and data from other longer-term safety studies also need to be carefully analyzed. He's seen drug reviews where the medical safety reviewer completely failed to make evaluations prior to the drug's approval. Human clinical pharmacology trials are typically done in Europe, yet clinical pharmacology reviewers at FDA have been barred from analyzing this information prior to studies being conducted in the U.S. Without being able to do this, we are unable to detect evidence of risk early and cannot provide enough guidance with the help of development of the drug in terms of safety and efficacy, but also in the efficiency and cost effectiveness of the drug's development. A drug company is not required to include adverse events on the drug's label if the adverse reaction is below a certain percentage or below double the rate of the adverse event found in a placebo. Do you understand what that means? So if it's less than 10%, you don't have to say it. Or if it's below double, so if 10% of the people getting placebo got this and yours is below 20%, you don't have to say it. That's right. I just outed some math because it's something you need to grasp. If the placebo given to the people when you were doing your drug test, you gave it to five people on the left, five people on the right. Placebo got five on the left, got placebo. That's sugar pills to you brain. Wait a minute. They stopped listening to me. Yeah. Yeah, they had to stop listening. We're in hour two. They can't listen this long. It's already hurting. Okay, so five on the left get the drug, right? 10% of them. Well, you can't really get 10%. Let's do 10% of 10. You can do 20%. But that makes it 40, though, so that's going to take a big number. Let's do 10. 10 people on the left, 10 people on the right. Let's make it easy math because I don't know what time you're listening to this. Could be 4 a.m., and if it's 4 a.m. and you're listening to me do 10% of 5, you're going, I'm not a human. I know. All right, so 10 on the left, 10 on the right, right? 10%. One person on the left gets, dies suddenly from their eyeballs shooting out of the back of their head. Right? If the people on the right were below double the rate of the adverse event, in other words, 20%, as long as they're below it. So let's say two eyeballs and three eyeballs. So 15% of the eyeballs in the study on the right-hand side shot through the back of the head, they don't have to tell you that your eyeballs may shoot out the back of your head when you take the drug. Are you listening to that? We've been talking about the FDIs on this program for years. In the interview, the guy discussed some of the dangerous drugs that were approved in the face of unequivocal safety concerns. One of them is the nerve gas drug, pyridostigmine. It was a prophylactic drug against the nerve agent Soman. The drug was approved under the animal rule, which allows drugs to be approved based on animal data alone. Multiple problems with the approval. First, the animal studies did not reflect how the drug would be used in humans. Second, the drug actually increases lethality if the nerve agents other than Soman are used. Right? How about that? Oh, other flawed parameters in pediatric studies for kids. This is working, right? Studies for kids. The following flawed parameters are typically used in pediatric drug studies. Dose based on approved adult dosages without regard for metabolic differences between a developing child's body and an adult. Exposure studies oftentimes use overweight children and include two few children to adequately evaluate risks. No allowances are made for race, age, puberty, or actual weight. Dangers to pregnant women and their developing fetuses are frequently ignored. The FDA appears to be engaged in a systematic hush operation designed to give just about anything Big Pharma develops the green light. That's right. FDA's response to most expected risks is to deny them and wait until there is irrefutable evidence post-marketing, and then simply add a watered-down warning on the label. In fact, when patients exhibit drug toxicity, it is usually attributed to an underlying condition which we know is likely to make the drug toxicity worse. This also allows the toxicity to be dismissed and being unrelated to the drug in any way. When do you raise potential safety issues, the man said when he was asked. The refrain that he heard repeatedly from upper management was, "Where are the dead bodies in the street?" Which I took to mean that we only do something if the press is making an issue of it. When the guy tried to tell people about it, he found his office had been entered and his computer physically tampered with. He tried to give a congressman some papers, and the Food and Drug employees got his staff to destroy the evidence he provided to them. One manager actually threatened his children, who just turned 4 and 7, as he was referred to as a saboteur. The FDA's mission statement reads as follows, ladies and gentlemen. I want you to pay attention. The FDA is responsible for protecting the public health by assuring the safety, efficacy, and security of human and veterinary drugs, biological products, medical devices, our nation's food supply, cosmetics, and products that emit radiation. The FDA is also responsible for advancing the public health by helping to speed innovations that make medicines and foods more effective, safer, and more affordable, and helping get the public accurate, science-based information they need to use medicines and foods to improve their health. The FDA does not want you to use foods to improve your health, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to go ahead and tell you that right now. We've had countless, I do mean countless, discussions on that. Small technical difficulty that will not be heard on archive plays, but if you're here live, apologize for that brief pause. Anyway, I'm so flustrated. Specifically, a trillion in consumer products, the FDA, if this science is bad, you are in trouble, ladies and gentlemen. 80% of the resources in the FDA are geared toward the approval of new drugs and 20% for everything else. Drug safety is 5%. The gorilla in the living room is the new drug and approval. Congress created the structure. Is it not true anything government touches turns worse? They worsen the structure through the PDUFA, which is the Prescription Drug User Fee Act, by which drug companies now pay money to the FDA so they would review and approve its drug. What? Wait a minute. You didn't know that, did you? You didn't know that Congress passed a law that said we'll accept money to rubber stamp your drug? You didn't know that, did you? I think we just got some people a little bit nervous and upset. Junk science then, shall we? Scientists have unscrambled the truth about eggs. There you go. That's all you need to know. The truth is here. I'm about to tell it to you. You ready? Now you've heard this. Eggs are bad. Eggs are great. Eggs are awesome. Well, now it's come out. Eating the yolk is as bad as smoking in speeding up coronary heart disease, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. Eggs, cigarettes, same thing. Same thing, as far as your heart is concerned. So, pick one. We did not expect him to say that. Now, I know you didn't. It's kind of weird. That was... because if it's as bad, you could, smokers could simply stop eating eggs, and they're doing just the one. Right? Or non-smokers can simply go on and eat eggs, and everyone's going to die of the same coronary issue as the other person. One person smokes at the table drinking coffee, one person eats eggs. There you go. Case closed. The problem lies in the increased risk of the hardening of the arteries. That's right. It is a disorder, atherosclerosis. The disorder of the arteries where the plaques aggravated by cholesterol, which, oh my. It's the third lie in this article we've already done. Form on the inner arterial wall as a key component of breakfast. The new findings may not put off egg lovers, but Dr. David Spence revealed eating the yolk of an egg is 2/3 as bad as smoking when it comes to build up the plaques. Surveyed 1,231 men and women, Dr. Spence in the University of Western Ontario, London, Canada, linked the findings to stroke and heart attack risk factors. Plaque rupture is the usual cause of most heart attacks and many strokes. The study involved patients with an average age of 61.5 attending vascular prevention clinics in Ontario. Ultrasound was used to establish a measurement of total plaque area, and questionnaires were filled out regarding the patient's lifestyles. The research found counted plaque area increased in line with age after 40, but increased above the average rise after years of regular smoking and egg yolk consumption. Those eating at least 3 yolks a week had significantly more plaque area than those who ate up to 2 yolks per week. The study shows that with age, plaque builds up gradually in the arteries and egg yolks makes it build up faster. The effects were independent of sex, cholesterol, blood pressure, smoking, body mass index, and diabetes. He said that while he feels more research should be done, in other words, give me more money and I'll find out if I'm telling you the truth. He stressed that regular consumption of egg yolk should be avoided by persons at risk of cardiovascular disease.
Now, for those of you who listen to this show often, you know we go into health often. And we know that egg whites are full of lecithin, which gives arteries natural elasticity. And we also know that yolks help strengthen arteries. The difference that we're seeing in today's world, again, ladies and gentlemen, is your food has changed around you. You can say I'm eating exactly what my grandmother ate, and she lived till she was 95. Problem is, you're not. When she ate mayonnaise, she made it. When she ate eggs, she got them from the farm out back. Same with meat. And then, of course, they had to work all day. They don't sit in front of a microphone and blab for 2 hours. Oh, wait. Wait. That wasn't supposed to come out. Shh. I'm kidding. I stand a lot while this is done. Specifically because I'm tired of sitting. One 1,231 people is very small. And not only did they find out that eggs were the only thing they pinpointed out on the study, they did not tell us what else they put down that they ate. We don't know what they ate for dinner the same day they ate eggs, ladies and gentlemen. So, again, more junk science. What is the goal behind it? My guess for the guy, get a little more money. Right? Now we've got to talk about something near and dear to my heart. As everyone knows, we homeschool. In fact, I'm going to announce something really cool soon. It's going to help. Okay? But there's a UN treaty that could actually be signed and link all the way back to homeschoolers. Because in the treaty, it tries to talk about disabled, expanding the rights of disabled. It's the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Disabled, which calls for government agents to supersede the authority of parents of disabled children and even covers abortion. What that's saying is that the language in there is not simply stopping at the disabled. It's actually saying there's an international body going to tell their parents that they can't homeschool. This is Sweden or Switzerland, whichever one that I've been talking about recently, that's trying to ban it. Okay? This is not good at all. So you need to get involved and say do not in any way, shape, or form. Sign the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Disabled. It sounds pretty, but it's not. But let's go into a little more homeschooling. There was a Lebanon series on is public education going broke? Well, somehow, two of those articles out of four, right? The four articles were part one. Many believe the process by which public schools are funded is broken. That's a smart question, right? That was part one. Remember, this is public education going broke. Part two, what to do about teachers' salaries? Valid question, right? Part three, the cost of homeschooling, the family's perspective. Let's look at how they spoke about this, shall we? Homeschooling families around Lebanon County County annually dedicate time, energy, and money to educating their children at home without government subsidies to offset the cost.
Forbid! They are doing it without government assistance or government subsidies or government help of any kind. What is wrong with these families?
Unlike families who choose private schools, who also do not receive government aid, homeschool families often sacrifice the income of one parent who becomes the children's primary instructor, in addition to the cost of buying books, taking classes outside the home, and a variety of other education-related expenses. What? Campbelltown resident Jim, the retired president of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, is a homeschool father. Said the schooling choice requires great sacrifices on an ongoing basis. Decisions you're faced with: are we going to buy a $250,000 home or the one in the Cayman Islands? Are we going to drive cars that are several years older than we used to drive in? So, yeah, there's sacrifice there. The loss of income is certainly significant, but that's a parental choice. They sacrificed the income of their mother, who gave a career in marketing advertising so she could homeschool their children. In addition to the loss of income, they've already told you, you're already losing money here, family. Many homeschool parents pay a premium for their child's educational materials. Lebanon resident homeschool mother Kathy estimates spending $1,500 a year on books to educate her high school-aged child. Cost is not taking into account online AP classes or classes at local colleges, which can cost up to $700 per class, each of which Winger says is a common expense for homeschool families. The average homeschool family spends about $400 to $600 range in educational materials for each child, for each of their children, according to a study by the National Home Education Research Institute. Did we really need to create an entire institute to research the National Home Education? And it was published in the Academic Leadership Journal in February. Dr. Colleen Van Noord, superintendent of the Palmyra Area School District. That's right. The superintendent of schools cautions that educational materials, even quality ones, do not ensure a good education. Very difficult to say that $600 worth of books will buy you this experience when public school spends thousands of dollars to help teachers who are ready and well-educated in the techniques of teaching, in the art of teaching, the science of teaching. How do you get to an aha moment of thinking when you're interacting only with paper and maybe one other person? Susan Rickman, leader at PA Homeschoolers, an organization that provides AP class services to Pennsylvania homeschool students, suggests this lack of professional resources is homeschoolers' biggest asset. She believes homeschoolers thrive off the innovating and finding non-traditional ways to educate that are more meaningful to students. Because homeschoolers are forced to design their own curriculum with budgetary constraints, she sees many homeschoolers create unique and meaningful ways to educate their children. Taking initiative is a hallmark of a good homeschooling family, and it's something the students pick up on. She even remembers an example from her own days as a homeschooling parent. Her daughter had an interest in learning more about the plays of Shakespeare, so she started the Shakespeare Sleepover Society. She and a group of friends wrote a Shakespeare play independently, then came together to discuss the play and create and film a spoof of it during a monthly sleepover. What do you think about that? Homeschool mother Jaslyn recalls a recent decision she and her husband made that struck her as the cost of homeschooling because she chose to turn down a part-time job in her dream profession, working with new and expecting mothers in a nursing capacity. Something I really, really would have liked to do, but after prayer and discussion with her husband, she determined the cost of having me not in the home was going to outweigh what we'd have to gain in extra income and getting to myself to pursue an interest we have.
He's holding her down. I mean, that's obvious. Right? That's all homeschooling's about. Man holding the woman down. But the other one was the man teaching. The woman was... I know. Smart people are paying attention to me going, I know he's making fun right now. I'll get back to the story.
Kids need a life plan more than adults do because they're still budding and growing. Okay? homeschooling is a way to build whole kids who are called to serve. Some people note that when they sent their kids to school, they did not get the best education. They were allegedly the best school district in the state. Homeschool mothers' rewards say far outweigh the cost. This article is written fully in the perspective. Oh, wow. Remember I talked about the school district superintendent, Colleen Van Noord. Let's talk about her for a minute. She says no amount of sacrifice, no amount of parental sacrifice or money can make the homeschool experience equal to public school. She also says in article number 4 of Is Public Education Growing Broke? Remember, we just talked about shoes going on count day. Here's another article. Are public schools going broke? Part 4 is the cost of homeschooling. What school administrators say. Well, didn't the school administrator start talking part 3 that I just discussed? She said. I have no idea where we knocked off. We do not know when the audio went down. We're just going to continue on like it just came back. Remember, we were talking about the cost of homeschooling from the family's perspective. The entire article talks about the cost of the sacrifice the parents are going to have to make, how much you're going to have to pay, but every parent says it's worth it. That's why we made the choice. And then, of course, Colleen Van Noord, the superintendent of Palmyra Area School District, says no amount of parental sacrifice or money will make the homeschool experience equal to that of public education. Well, that was part 3 of our public schools going broke. What are they talking about homeschooling for? Well, part 4 is homeschooling. So actually part 3 and part 4 is about homeschooling. When it was talking our public schools going broke, I don't understand. So the cost of homeschooling, what the school administrators say, back to what she said, same Colleen Van Noord, superintendent of the Palmyra Area School District, I suggest everyone write or call her. She says the problem posed by homeschooling is not the cost of public schools. No, no, nay, nay, not at all. No way. We can give away shoes to get people on count day, so our budget will be fine. Our budget will be fine. My salary is fine. Teachers are fine. The cost, the potential cost is to students and to society. That's right. Right. Yes, yes, she says our salaries are great. What's happening is you homeschoolers are going to be a burden on society because you are not following the rules. Homeschooling has been legal in Pennsylvania for 24 years. Pennsylvania school districts do not receive state or federal subsidies for children homeschooled within the district. In essence, a child being homeschooled means less per pupil subsidy money coming from state and federal sources for local school districts. That's right. Now on count day. On count day, if the homeschooler's at home, it means less per pupil subsidy money. Now, let me ask you this. If you've got 10,000 people in school, you're going to get 10,000 people worth of money. If the homeschoolers equal 1,000 and they come in, it's $11,000, and you get $11,000 worth of money, does that mean you can handle 11,000 students?
Is every student budgetary money that you get actually go and help the student if this is all you're worried about? Is count day? Let's not even talk about the fact that homeschool families, students' families still pay their property taxes, which is supposed to go to the public school system. Right. School districts do not reimburse any education-related expenses to homeschool families. Do you understand that? Little is known about the cost associated with supervising homeschool students. But the Palmyra School District estimates dedicates 67 hours of labor and $125 of postage per year to supervise the 104 homeschool students. That's approximately 38 minutes and $1.17 per homeschooling student. These hours are spread out over a variety of administration positions over district receptionists, administrators at each schooling level, and district superintendent. Now, she notes that there are other, Colleen Van Noord, superintendent of the Palmyra Area School District, notes there's a variety of other indirect costs to the school district incurred by homeschoolers. So don't go by that 67 hours of labor and $125 of postage per year. Because we need to include the cost of participation in school district extracurricular activities by the four homeschool children in the district who take advantage of the opportunity. She describes these costs as difficult to quantify. Difficult to quantify. Those four bastard children that come. Oh. Those four. Oh. You gotta. I got to tweet a picture of this lady, Colleen Van Noord. Those bastards that come and join in for extracurricular activity. The costs are difficult to quantify. Now, some people say that the ones that are homeschooled actually help the school because the property taxes still get paid. And the school has less children to deal with, so they can be more one-on-one. That's right. The property taxes are still paid. The state taxes are still paid. The pot is no smaller for the schools to scoop out of than if he was sending the kids to school. So if he's not sending the kids to school, they don't have to spend the resource on his kid. They actually have more money for every homeschool. And there's 104 of them in the area, in the district. The district of area Palmyra. I bet you Colleen Van Noord is saying, he's not even saying Palmyra right. Miss Dr. Colleen Van Noord. The cost of participation in the home district extracurricular activities by the four. Those four bastard homeschooled children in the district who take advantage of the opportunity, those costs are difficult to quantify. Difficult to quantify.
Oh.
If there were 55,000 homeschool students in Pennsylvania and the parents all said we're done, the taxpayers would have to offer up another $825 million to the state school system. That's right, 55, let me repeat that. If there were 55 homeschool students, 55,000 homeschool students in Pennsylvania, and they all went back to schools, taxpayers would have to come up with $825 million to handle it. $825 million to handle it. Do the math, something's wrong.
But Dr. Colleen Van Noorn cautions against putting too much stock into that speculation. It's not untrue what he's saying. But he's at a national level, not a state perspective.
Excuse me, Colleen. He said students in Pennsylvania. I believe that's a state. I don't think it's called United States of Pennsylvania. She went on to explain that
such thinking is based on thinking at the macro level and breaks down when you look at individual schools and individual students.
You add one more child in our classes and it's no big deal, Van Noorn said that.
We can absorb that. But if we had 50 kids come in droves, like Ray was talking about.
In other words, remember there's 54. So if we have 50, if all of them come in, exactly what he just said.
Then certainly we would need more class space. If every homeschool child come in here, we'd have to hire more teachers and fill up the capacity we have here or build sooner.
So the guy says if there are 55,000 homeschool students in the state of Pennsylvania, not the nation of Pennsylvania, and the parents were sending all these children, it costs $825 million to the state school system. And she goes, that's not untrue what he's saying, but no, it's not. No, he's thinking much bigger nationally, not stately. And if you add one child to our class, it's no big deal. But all the homeschoolers, like 50 kids come in. Remember, there's 54. If like 50 kids come in droves, then certainly we would need more class space. We'd have to hire more teachers and fill up the capacity we have here built sooner. Oh, my. The largest potential cost is where children...
The largest potential cost is for children in a homeschool situation where they don't get the education they need, they end up back in more formal school training, or they never do get the education they need, and of course that's a cost to society.
Society! What's the cost of society... Wait a minute.
What's the cost of society if young children are abused on a daily basis but don't get out of there? You can't quantify that. It should be unacceptable, and the public outcry should be horrible.
She says there's potential extreme cases of neglect can occur under the guise of homeschooling. Well, duh. Some people lie. That don't make it bad.
Wow.
There are students that fall through the cracks in homeschool and in school districts. But I guarantee you, I've got proof, homeschooling produces, when done correctly, produces a much better student. And we're going to keep this topic alive. We're going long here for those of you who live. Well, I don't know if those who live are hearing it. You're going to have to hear the archive version. But I've got two things I wanted to talk about that was about emerging triumphant in a different way. One of them is the 1987 Michigan plane crash. Survivor, the only one. 156 people, including her entire family, died. Mother, father, and six-year-old brother died in the air disaster. She lived. She's 29 years old, married, and the firefighter who saved her life attended her wedding. She was a four-year-old girl, survived because her mom probably put her body over her. She was the sole survivor in this plane crash. She's 29, getting married. You guys, do you understand? She spoke for the first time. She has a tattoo of a plane on her wrist. I'm stunned. She understands she was involved in the accident. She doesn't have memory of how it happened.
She has kept in touch with the family she died in the crash, including her rescuer. He met her for the first time on her wedding day, and he watched her walk down the aisle. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this young lady, sole survivor, emerged triumphant through luck or through the brilliant, gallant act of her mother. Either way, you've got to feel something for her. How amazing is that? I wish her well. I wish her well. Now let's talk about another emerging triumphant in a different light. America's longest serving female inmate has walked free after 49 years because she is now free. Because they do not believe that she is a danger to the community any longer. She was convicted of strangling a 15-month-old baby to death. She was given life before 1973. She needed the governor to grant her a commutation to be eligible for parole. They asked the psychiatrist of whether she posed a threat to society. At a parole hearing, she said she was not perfect, but she changed a great deal. All but one member on the parole board voted her into freedom. I really see no value in keeping you in prison any longer. I see no value in keeping strings on you any longer. Parole board chairman Jesse Hernandez told Smithy Gainey, giving her freedom. She was convicted of a 1963 New Year's Day murder of Sandy Gerberich, one of four children she was caring for as a 20-year-old live-in babysitter. The baby's mother, Emma, was making breakfast when her 6-year-old son ran in shouting, "Mama, Sandy's dead." Sandy was strangling, and Smithy was arrested the next day, found hitchhiking. She told the patrolman, "I think I hurt the baby. I may have used a stocking." She's tried to kill herself in prison. She was led for the courtroom in 1963 saying, "I'm not going to prison, I'll kill myself, you watch." She got a letter from the victim's mother saying, "I forgive you." Her statement is, "I can't bring back the life I took. It doesn't alter the fact of what I did. The only thing I can do is try to make myself a better person." Now, I just gave you two instances of people coming out of something that was holding them back. One of them is an amazing survivor story. One of them is just an old lady who killed a baby and is now allowed to walk free. They're not exactly the same, but I want you to see the similarities. And in no means should you and can you get in your head, especially if you're a regular listener, that I am for the releasing of this baby killer. Well, when is the debt to society paid? Well, I don't know. You got life. That
They deemed you life in prison, never to see the light of day. And then someone later says, you know what, they could probably be wrong. So it's not the jury of your peers. It's the jury of your peers against the jury of your peers against the jury of your peers. Against the government board. There's way more government stuff to talk about, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to do it, but we've already ran long. Those of you listening, we're way past 2 hours. I'd like to thank you for listening. I want you to find me on Facebook.com/EmergeTriumphant and, of course, Twitter.com/JackHatfield, where you hear all the latest buzz. We will be back next week. We don't have a date down yet. We're still beating around at the days and dates of when things are going to happen. We apologize for that, but please... We do know that you guys are listening. That's a fact, and we appreciate it. And we have grown more in the last 2 weeks than we have in the previous 3 months. We're very pleased. So each and every one of you, thank you for listening. Write me an email. Send me a tweet. Post something on my wall. And let's get this party started. My question at the end, you had two people, one amazing soul survivor, one killed a baby, one, both are free. Both are living. Similarities and differences, and your thoughts.
Yeah.